Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from the Washington, D.C. area is Mike Levin. Mike is the Vice President of Compliance and Ethics at Freddie Mac. And coming to us from Dallas is Eric Hinton. Eric is Director at the Rowling Center for Business Law and Leadership at Southern Methodist University and formerly was the Chief Ethics and Compliance Officer for 7-Eleven. They're here in their capacities as co-chairs of the General Compliance Hot Topics track at the 2020 Compliance and Ethics Institute. Eric, Mike, thanks for joining us, and actually thanks for working with me on that track.
Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure.
So let's talk about the track, and can you take us through some of the sessions and some of the ones that stood out for you? Eric, why don't we start with you?
Sure. There's a number that are exciting to me, but in particular, there's a few in the pre-session as well as the general sessions. One in particular is building best-in-class compliance programs in small organizations. Most of my career, I've worked in large organizations, but now that I'm a university, it's a small university and there's a different kind of environment. So this is especially applicable, especially in a large conference like this. It'll talk about how small organizations can take the resources that they have and put together an effective program that fits their organization. Another one, and I'll be speaking more on this later, is building an effective policy management and governance program with intentionality. I think all of us can identify with the challenge of putting together a compliance program that has consistent policies and procedures, and this will be a great opportunity to learn best practices in that area. And then finally, one of the advanced level topics that I thought stuck out to me was change management, transforming a long-established compliance program. I think this is a challenge for many of us because you may have the most effective and wonderful program in the world, but it takes a special kind of skill to take that sort of program to the next level. The speakers on that particular panel include Ethics and Compliance Director at Cargill and also the Chief Ethics and Compliance Officer at 3M Corporation. So I look forward to that one too.
Sounds interesting. And I got to say, I'm having been in compliance so long, I'm happy to see at the point where we are looking at change management to long, well-established programs. I remember when the struggle was just starting. Now, Mike, any topics really stand out for you as we get into this?
Well, I think, Adam, the attendees at the CEI can't go wrong with any of these sessions because we really did put together a great agenda of topics. But there are a few that do stand out in addition to the ones Eric just mentioned. Session 208, Unconscious Bias, Cognitive Errors, and the Compliance Professional should be a very good presentation. Michael Johnson is always a very engaging presenter. He has excellent stories from the field, and I think this topic in particular today is so timely. I'm excited to hear how his strategies for recognizing and addressing bias and how to better manage investigations. I think it's going to be a great session. Another one is one of the rooster sessions for those who are early risers. Return on investment or really obscure idea demonstrating the value of compliance to the board, executive management, employees, and every other stakeholder in your organization. I think not only is this maybe the longest title of any session we have on the agenda, I think it's also a very important topic. The session is going to endeavor to answer the age-old question of all compliance professionals, which is what we do impactful and how can we prove it? So I think that'll be a great session for a wide audience. And then another one that the title is near and dear to my heart, session 408, Keep Calm, Eat Chocolate, and Never Let Them See You Sweat, Tips from the Trenches on How to Lead Your Organization Through a Crisis. And so in my mind, there's nothing better than dark chocolate and a good gritty story of some other company's crisis and how compliance handled it. Better to listen to other people's war stories than having to go through the trenches yourself. But we can all benefit from these kinds of lessons learned and shared by someone who had a near-death corporate crisis.
Well, to tie some of those together, I agree on that sounds promising, but I may have some unconscious bias because I've already had a chocolate Pop-Tart this morning in my pandemic comfort food. Now, one of the topics that's going to be addressed is effective partnership strategies with the board of directors. Michael, at a previous CEI, you addressed a similar topic. What do you find is key to making that relationship work?
So we handled this at the last CEI. We did a session called A View from the Board, where I moderated a panel of two or three board members of different companies, talking about what they look for from compliance professionals and what they need to do their job. So I think there's a few key elements to making the relationship work with the board, and I think access and adding value are at the top of that list. You can't forge a relationship with the board if you don't have access, a regular access to the board. So how do you get that access? You have to make sure you're providing the board with something of value. Data-driven information helps them exercise their fiduciary duty of oversight. And if compliance reports say to the audit committee of the board, you should open a line of communication with the audit committee chair. If it's the risk committee, then the risk committee chair. But routinely check in with that person, with him or her. Building a relationship by being a trusted partner that brings value will secure your role and make the compliance board partnership much more effective.
Now, Eric, discipline's another topic that's on the agenda. What do you find from your experience makes for effective discipline and, importantly, incentive programs?
That is a great question. And the second part, I think, is more difficult to answer than the first. Most of us have understood that this is a challenge, really, on the incentive side. The discipline side, which I'll handle first, is a little more straightforward. And I do want to mention that one of our sessions, this is P30, warnings, PIPs, and terminations, developing a consistent approach to discipline for compliance shortcomings will be a good primer on this. But as far as discipline, it's important, number one, that the standards are clear. I think it's also important that there's consistency in the way that discipline is administered across the organization. So in other words, don't have the actuality or the perception that higher level employees are somehow treated more favorably or different than those that are somewhere else in the organization. It's also important to, while investigating a matter, deal with it comprehensively, but also make sure that the resolution is timely, so that there's a way to make sure that people are not left hanging for a long period of time. And then ultimately, I don't think that there's any substitute for having a good culture, so that employees feel comfortable in doing the right thing, and that ultimately discipline becomes something that's less of an issue, and that we get to focus more on the incentive side. I think incentives are challenging, as I mentioned. One, because it used to be in the past that your incentive for doing the right thing is you got to keep your job. I think what chief ethics and compliance officers have to do is to go beyond that and to find creativity in rewarding employees in an appropriate way for doing the right thing, or inspiring others around them to be ethical and to comply with the law.
Now, Michael, compliance training will be on the agenda, and your background includes time in the training field. How do you think training needs to respond to the new dynamic of work?
Sure. So I guess in the new dynamic of work, we're thinking of our current reality, more remote workers, less people getting together in the workplace. So clearly, training remains a critical component of compliance program, but it's increasingly difficult in this COVID pandemic world to do training. So most corporate compliance training uses both web-based training, live training for various topics, short-form training on routine bases to raise awareness and keep issues top of mind, and longer training or deep dives on more critical risk topics. I think many companies are extending deadlines to complete training as they've gone to a virtual work environment, and employees have more demands on their time, like, you know, children at home or home from school or on summer vacation with very few summer camps available, or caring for sick family members at the home. So it's more challenging to get seat time for employees. Also, work settings where computer-based learning is not available, like manufacturing settings, companies oftentimes conduct live sessions, which just aren't feasible in a pandemic. And so companies are having to get creative on how to train these employees using computers. Companies are looking for new delivery systems, using apps on smartphones to achieve training objectives. But I'm really excited to hear what the presenters will share about training at the CEI. There's a few sessions that are focusing on training, and I'm sure the folks speaking will have some really nice insights.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued by that too, having also spent time in the training industry, as you know. Now, we'll also be addressing policy management as part of the agenda for this track. And few institutions have more policies than universities, as I'm sure you found, Eric. What's your experience makes for good policy management?
Well, that's a good question, and as you mentioned, I am in a university, and definitely universities are unique animals. I would say that corporations too are just as complex and in many ways just as challenging. I think from my experience is that there's a number of factors that you need to see in proper and effective policy development and management. And in fact, the DOJ corporate guidelines on the evaluation of programs, I think, is especially instructive. And those elements are design, comprehensiveness, accessibility, responsibility for operational integration, and gatekeepers. And you know, when I look at that, I see in my own experience a number of ways that you can improve that. So, for instance, the gatekeeper point is especially relevant because there needs to be people that are aware of the policies and procedures. There also needs to be people who are, let's say, process owners of that particular policy, so that when it needs to be updated or administered or interpreted, there's someone you can go to. I think another important part, and we see this in the university setting in particular, is to have a platform, and it doesn't even have to be that fancy, where employees can get those policies and procedures and be able to understand them and then find additional resources in order to interpret them. I think finally, you just need to have a way to keep them current, to make, for instance, a policy on policies to keep them consistent across the organization so that there aren't differences or inconsistencies that employees have to figure out on their own.
Now, finally, not on the hot topic track, but really the hottest topic there is these days is COVID-19. We'll be having a general session discussing it. I think it's going to come up over and over again in all the other sessions. You know, as Michael, you mentioned when we were discussing training, it's impacting that as well. Let me ask you guys both, what do you think compliance teams need to be thinking about as they continue along with the rest of the business to navigate this pandemic? Michael, why don't we start with you?
Sure, Adam, I can think of a few things. First, don't forget why we're here as compliance and ethics professionals, to help protect the company from legal and reputational risk stemming from poor business conduct. We have to keep running the railroad as we normally do. Next, we need to partner more than ever, especially with our business resiliency teams, to ensure that how the company flexes to deal with the pandemic doesn't create additional risk. As an example, I'm partnering now more to track data around hiring and onboarding in a virtual world, to make sure that that is working and can be continued, and also monitoring sick leave to ensure that our workforce is adequate to achieve our mission during the pandemic, making sure from a people risk perspective that the company can carry on and meet its overall scorecard objectives, regulatory objectives, mission objectives, is really critical, when you don't know how you could be impacted from an illness perspective in your workforce. And finally, we need to carefully document any deviations we've made from our policies and procedures to deal with the pandemic. If we loosen any standards, we need to know what they are, how long they've been relaxed, whether such changes increase our risk, and what risk level is tolerable. Then we need to be sure we can revert back to our normal processes once the pandemic is under control.
Yeah, I think you make a good point too, is also always remembering that there, in fact, will be a tomorrow eventually, and that we have to go back and look at what we did today to get us there. Eric, any closing
Exactly.
thoughts from you?
Just a few. I think one of the things that will help all of us is to be a team player in this challenging time. I think most organizations are struggling in one way or the other, whether it's with too much work or not enough, or the potential of layoffs or financial impact. So I think it's important to understand that your business is there to do business and to understand how the business makes money. That doesn't mean we need to take away from the ethics or the compliant nature of our organizations, but I think it helps to understand what the motivating factors are and try to develop a program that works real time with our organization. I also think, to some of Michael's points, there are some work from home challenges, and then an interesting challenge, I think, really relates in some ways to attorney-client privilege and to what extent maybe some activities that we might do in ways that we haven't in the past when we work from home might threaten waiver of that privilege. And then finally, I think risk assessment is just key. Really, how many of us would have probably thought about some sort of disruption like this in our own risk assessments at a corporate individual level? And so I think that just tells us we should be flexible in the way that we do our programs. We need to adapt to the facts on the ground and then proceed accordingly.
Well, there's definitely a lot to think about through this time, and I'm glad we'll have the Compliance and Ethics Institute for people to be able to really ponder these issues and figure out what's to be done moving forward. Well, thank you both for your work on the general compliance hot topics track, and thanks for sharing your insights with us today. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.